Welcome to Life Lab, hosted by David Ponder and Zach Schaefer, where we inspire listeners to live the good life through organic conversations about evergreen topics.
Life Lab captures our belief in personal evolution and a growth mindset. So,
experiment with life.
Hello. It is our 100th episode. So, welcome. We're going to do things a little bit differently than we typically do here at Life Lab. Usually, we start off with some sort of a story or observation, and we kind of just roll into the topic of the day that we're going to discuss. But we decided we're going to change things up. We're going to switch things up for episode
100. The old switcheroo.
So as a part of episode 100, we are welcoming our first, well, our second, if you think about it, guest. And so this is going to be a different format than our typical episodes. We're welcoming a guest and our new sponsor, Mark Miller of Miller Furniture. So, Mark, welcome.
Pleasure to be here, Dave and Zach. Known you guys a long time. Very happy to sponsor and be a part of this very interesting discussion.
Well, thanks. It's 100 episodes. I don't know if we would have thought we would have got to 100 when we started, but here we are. And, you know, adding a sponsor now, and we're really trying to push this thing and turn it into something new. Thank you for joining us on this episode.
Yeah.
And today we're going to talk about a couple things. We're going to talk about freedom. And before we wanted to talk about freedom, we wanted to introduce you and get to know a little bit about you and what it is that you do, Mark.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a fourth-generation retailer, Miller Furniture, and that's spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R. Looks like Miller, looks like Mueller. We pronounce it Miller, but we answer to both. Just don't call me Muller. Anyway, Miller Furniture started in 1927, height of the Roaring Twenties. Great year. If you look at a lot of businesses started in 26 and 27. It was a great time to start a business, but somehow managed to survive the early years of the Depression. Selling quality furniture. We were never like a discount furniture store. Everybody knew to go to Miller's for good quality stuff. That's what my great grandfather always wanted. So passed down great grandfather and his oldest son, my grandfather and his wife, my grandma, and then my dad took over the business and ran it for about 50 years, 17 of them with me the last 17 years. So been full-time since 2004 after I got out of college. And we are the home for American-made furniture in the St. Louis area. That's the thing that was kind of an internal selling point for us. And then we turned it into a marketing campaign, and it just really took off. I would have to look carefully at some maybe one or two other people, but I think at this point we're the largest distributor of Amish furniture in the Midwest.
Wow. And how long did it take to build those relationships? I mean, I assume you weren't picking up the cell phone to just make calls to random Amish men?
No, it's gotten better through the years. There's more capabilities to do business in a more convenient, 2022 kind of fashion now. But I mean, in 2008, that's kind of when we really first started getting into it. A lot of handwritten faxes that get responded to a day or two later. I mean, you almost were better off writing them a letter and mailing it to it.
Wow. So what we're going to be doing moving forward, everybody, is we're going to record a bunch of spots for Mark so he can kind of introduce probably some of his product lineup and maybe different promotions, discounts, specials. Really whatever Mark wants to talk about, and we'll kind of plug those in for all of our different episodes moving forward. I mean, what else is on your mind for today, Mark, in terms of the business or anything you got coming up?
I think the word that stands out for me is artisan. Right. When you hear the word artisan, you think of somebody that is a master at their craft. And that's really, like, when I go to these workshops in Ohio, that's what I see. There's this guy, we called him Custom Joe at Barkman Furniture. We showed up to visit. They were working. This was in late March. They were working. It was nighttime. It was probably 5:30 a.m. We got to their shop. I mean, we drove back road through back road. It went from main streets to rock roads, and we get to this furniture. I wouldn't call it a factory, but it's more than a workshop. And there's one guy that does all their custom work, Custom Joe. And Custom Joe might be the best furniture maker in the world. I mean, he very well could be. I mean, he's got to be in the top 0.1%.
Sure.
Because this is a – so all the Amish quality is really good.
Yeah.
This is a line that stands out above any other line, and he is the best guy at that line. Mm. So he's got to be top 0.1%. You know, so artisan – like I just think when the furniture that we have is – coming from the hands of artisans. And not just that it's cool to look at and cool to have in your house, but also the environmental impact is something that people don't really think about. Like a table and chairs or a really nasty couch, if you're throwing those out every couple of years, there's no recycling those things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's all straight landfill material. So there's a big benefit to buying something that is going to last 30-something years.
Yeah, well, that and shipping, if you're buying it and it's shipping over from China.
Plus the materials that it took to make those, you know. You got to clear-cut areas for for those materials.
In 30 years, that maple tree or hickory tree is going to grow again. And a lot of these guys, you know, there are some companies that have, like, reforesting initiatives, too. So
awesome.
Anyway, it's pretty cool stuff.
So artisan furniture from Miller Furniture, high quality. Dave and I mean, how many pieces of furniture do our families own?
Oh, yeah. There? Oh, yeah. We always go to Miller Furniture.
Yeah. So it's something that – it was cool for Mark to step up to sponsor us because he listens to Life Lab. Obviously, he's been a friend of ours for 25-plus years. But then we also actually use the furniture. Like, we just bought a love seat there 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we practice what we preach with this sponsor for sure.
You know, as you were telling those stories, I think that today's topic – runs through them. It's like
yes,
a thread that
I
runs
agree.
Through. You know, I was like, oh man, thinking about, you know, Miller Furniture has been in existence since 1926, right? Like, that had to be enabled by freedom, you know? You think about Custom Joe and what his life is like, right? And what he chooses to do as an artisan, right? And you think about, you know, what freedom is. We usually start this with a definition. Okay.
And yeah, dive in.
The definition that I got was that freedom is the power or right to act, speak, or think as one wants without hindrance or restraint. Mm-hmm. And when I was listening to your stories, I was thinking about other places, other jurisdictions in the world where those things could not have happened, right? Either due to controlling bodies like governments, or due to unforeseen events, wars, and things like that. And we've lived in and enjoyed a period of unbelievable freedom that has allowed those stories that you're talking about to be built. And so I was thinking, as you were talking about your business, I was like, wow, so much of those stories, so much of that is built on what I consider to be freedom. And it's something that we don't think about when we talk about those stories. We tell all kinds of stories mm-hmm. where freedom is a foundation, but we don't. It's almost like something that we take for granted sometimes.
Well, it's not almost. It is. They wouldn't exist if we had a government body that was centrally coordinating or planning and telling people what they can and can't do for a living or what is important for the society needs.
Or if the government had taken ownership of Miller Furniture and made it a state-owned enterprise.
You think like they'd be working with Custom Joe still, Mark, if the federal government took over?
No, it would be everybody would have to own Ashley. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Dewanix would have made a deal with the government to provide affordable, quote-unquote, affordable quality you know, furniture.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like somebody big like that would make a deal with the government.
What did you think of the definition that he came up with, the natural right to act, think, or feel?
Without hindrance or restraint. Act, speak, or think as one wants without hindrance or restraint.
Yeah. I think it hits it pretty spot on.
Mm-hmm. For me, I hear freedom, the F word, big F, and I think natural right. For me, freedom isn't something I can necessarily give another human being. I believe by being born onto this planet in this universe, I have it. It's an inalienable natural right that Jefferson wrote about, and I really do believe that. Now, I differentiate liberty as the political construct that humans have created and enshrined in our documents, in our constitutions, or in our employee manuals or whatever. That is how we politicize it. But for me, actual freedom means I'm born, I have choice, I can do different things. But then different groups of people have created systems that value that freedom to different degrees.
Well, and I'll say this, we're lucky to be born in a time and a place where we do consider that an unalienable right.
Oh,
there
yeah.
are plenty of places on the world right now.
Even today, yes.
Even today, where that is not, you're not born into that with a right. And I thought about when we were talking about and doing our notes, something that I wanted to bring up later, but as we're talking through it now, I just don't see how we can, which is the idea of property rights.
Mm.
And something that I didn't think of this way until I was listening to a different podcast, a guy who's pretty good at talking about property rights, money, stuff like that, Robert Breedlove. Mm-hmm. And he introduced this idea that property rights are essential to freedom, starting with the ownership of our own body. And I thought that was amazing. And there have been plenty of times and examples you can think of throughout history and places today where that was not the case.
No. Well, draft. I mean, a military draft. Like,
right.
Can you imagine being 18 and then somebody saying, suit up, go, you know, go to Vietnam? That's our, you know, kind of.
In this jungle.
Can you imagine that?
No, I think that's harder. I think that would be harder than being born into slavery. Because mm-hmm. if you're born into slavery and maybe you've known nothing else, right, then where with a draft, you've lived a free life up until that point.
And then it's taken away.
And it's all ripped away from you. You just had a child. You just began your new career. You just
Well, we were 19 when September 11th attacks mm-hmm. happened. You know, if this was a different era, we would have been draft material.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I just remember that feeling thinking, well, what would I do if this was really the case? And
yeah.
Whew.
It's tough. For me, freedom all boils down to choice. And I've got some notes that I'll get to. But I don't think you can talk about freedom without talking about choice and the other side of choice, which is responsibility and accepting the consequences of your choices, which many people are not good at that and they don't want to do that. But I believe that's what a responsible use of freedom does, is when I make a fucking choice, even if it's bad consequences and I don't like it, I have to own that.
Yeah, I literally wrote, you know, taking moments of freedom from your responsibilities did not take away the consequences. You simply traded your time for whatever those consequences are.
Awesome.
And sometimes that time is worth taking the consequences for. Other times the consequences are too great and you probably should have not shirked your responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a choice, right? You know, so I think some people feel trapped. I mean, I was driving over here thinking about the things that I'm missing out on, the things that could go wrong in my business because mm-hmm. I'm taking time to do this, mm-hmm. right? So I felt very trapped, and I felt like I did not have freedom. But it is a choice for me to come here and do this. It's also a choice for me to run a furniture company.
Right.
Like, that is a choice, and I made those choices. So anyway, anytime I start feeling trapped, it's like, no.
That's
back
your,
it up.
That's
like,
your doing.
You bought, you know, like what you call what Hunter S. Thompson.
Buy the ticket.
Buy the ticket, take the ride,
baby.
Man.
You know what? So as you guys are talking through this, choice and freedom, I agree with it at the level that the definition gives, right? The power to act, speak, or think as one wants. I'm going to double back on that think, because I think that one is a little different, right? Because thinking is tied to emotions, and controlling your thoughts and emotions is something completely different than what I think we're talking about here with choice. But while we're on the subject of choice, I want to talk about something that I think is interesting that impacts those feelings and emotions, which is the idea that we think that more choice is more freedom is better for us. That's just something that we sort of assume is the case. It's sold to us as a member of a consumer society. And yet it's something that I think we've talked about in the past on this episode, where sometimes more choice can put more pressure on you and make you feel as though the fault is yours if your life is not optimized at mm-hmm. the end of that decision-making process. Well, what do you think about that?
Well, so your last statement, yes, I think that's where we can easily shift the responsibility to others. Oh, I was overwhelmed. For better, again, we love capitalism. We love entrepreneurialism. We love property rights. I think a unfortunate, I'll say, offshoot of that is the inundation of choices of all things, you know. And I just think of the cereal aisle, just going down a cereal aisle. I was like, oh, my God, like I need to get a PhD to figure out which cereal to choose. Like it can just overwhelm you if you're not in a good state of mind. And it's actually called the paradox of choice. When too many choices actually – it has marginal utility when there's too many choices there. Now, I certainly don't want one choice from the government or even two. You know, give me 5 to 10. Like I'm good there. Like – and some people might prefer more, some less. We just redid our some spots of our house. How many paint colors do you think there were to choose from? Like to me, that's just it's an activity I won't participate in. I won't allow my time on Earth to be usurped by choosing paint palettes because I don't give a fuck. So I let Kizzy do it because she enjoys it. And then I just have to agree with whatever she chooses even if I don't like it.
Yeah, in furniture, you see that all the time. It's a great... You really get a good idea of the cross section of a particular, you know, group of people with furniture retail and really any retail,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
But yes, some people love caring about the minutia mm-hmm. of it, and other people are they want quick and easy, mm-hmm. which is why I stock things in a way that I want people to buy just like that. Because I can deliver it right away. But then I also have lines that allow me to do very, very custom type of furniture that, you know, you got to wait for it to come in and everything, but you can pick it down to every detail.
Right.
Because there's people that like one way and people like it the other
right.
way. So it's, anyway.
More than one way to skin a cat.
Oh, worst expression ever. Can we throw that one out?
Equifinality is the fancy way to say it.
Skin a cat and the redheaded stepchild thing. Can we stop?
I don't say that.
That's so, those are awful.
I think we're free to throw those out.
I do have freedom to say that.
All right.
Here's what I was, you know.
But you don't hit, but you can take the consequences.
I will take that for your blandishing of.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll wrap it up with this little part, which is the consequences of your choices. And that's what I think where regret can creep in. So when I was talking about the emotions that that choice impacts, right, regret becomes a big one. When people think that the choice that they made, they could have made a better one. They experience some level of, you know, oh, I wish I would have done this.
Buyer's remorse.
I wish I would have done that. And then, yeah, remorse, regret, whatever creeps in when they think about the choices that they have made. Now, that being said, for me, I had an epiphany about myself and what makes me think that I am free or what makes me think that I am closer to free, you know. And that is Zach's got this great picture on his wall hanging up right now. And it's basic. It looks like a tree that you've turned on your side, on its side, right? And it basically shows in the past, like to the left, if you read it left to right, that you've chosen a path, right, up to this point where it – you could have chosen many paths. You chose one, right? And all those other branches now are not available.
They're dead.
They're dead, right? You cannot go back and take those paths.
And then it hits a straight line that's present. And then there's a ton more paths, but all those paths are lit up green.
And they're available to you.
Meaning you can choose a different path.
Which is to say, like, are we aware of all the paths that are still available to us in this time, right? Like, we get ourselves so fixated on the path that we're on. So for you, right, you're here, you're making a podcast, but think of all the things that are happening at your business, right? If you would have just let inertia happen, or if you just mm-hmm. – you would not have even been aware of the other choices of the things that you could be doing with your time while you're running your business, because that's something you committed to a long time ago. And that's the path you're currently on, right? And so I thought that's interesting. And that is choice, whether we want to recognize it or not. And it just made me think, when I think about and when we talk about choice, I realize that for myself, when I think about freedom, I like optionality, right? I don't necessarily want to choose. I want to be able to choose.
Yeah. Tying into all this, I view all three of us as wealthy. I view wealth – I've stolen my definition from a guy named Alan Weiss, who is an extremely successful independent consultant, maybe the best one in the world. But he defines it as a discretionary use of time. Wealthy people have discretionary use of time. Like, even though you don't want to use your time, or maybe you didn't when you were driving over here for this, you can, Mark, because you have the ability to do so. People who don't have discretionary use of time, they're – I don't believe them to be wealthy. They are more – they view less paths, less options that they have.
That's right.
And for me, my keystone drive, my keystone internal locus of control is autonomy. So if I feel my autonomy being impinged, like with the COVID situation, that was hard for me. I don't react or behave in a good manner there. And that's why drinking also really didn't help me out, because it distorted my reality, and that autonomy would come out in really bad ways for people close to me.
Yeah, no, I feel right now, I mean, yes, I did come over here to do this, but I feel quite trapped mm-hmm. in my current situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been 2 straight years of this pandemic boom and anything home related, you know, if you're in construction, if you're in flooring, if you're, you name it, it's just been out of control. And so trying in a good way, in that we've all profited very, very much from it. But it's like I just find myself trying to dig out of this labyrinth so that I can achieve the ability to take my time and do something other than work. And I'm not there yet, but like every day, that's what drives me, is trying to get a hold of my current state at work, like get things running so smoothly that essentially I have to do more check-in mm-hmm. management, as opposed to like really micro mm-hmm. minutia
work
management.
On the business rather than in the business.
Yeah. That's kind of that would be one of the phrases, but just having the faith and the trust that it will be done well if mm-hmm. I don't get in and really get in the details. I feel trapped in those details right now, so I'm fighting every day to try to get out of, you know, try to get out of that.
Well, even just, it sounds like just to work less a little bit, right? So not just working on the business instead of working in the business, but also mm-hmm. having a little bit more optionality with your time.
Yeah,
right?
But I made a choice, right? I made a choice to live in Lake St. Louis mm-hmm. and know that my warehouse is an hour and 15 minutes away.
Right.
And if I was unable to get somebody to essentially run it the way my father did, that I was going to have to do it myself. Well, guess what? I'm 0-for-1 on replacements for dad. So guess what I'm doing? I'm driving but those are choices that I made, and I understand that, and I am feeling those consequences very heavily every day, very heavily. And it adds up, man. It's a pressure cooker. And then you don't think right. You know, you don't look at the path, different paths that you have, right? That tree you're talking about. And so, you know, the key is to just dial yourself back enough to look at all the different options you have to solve your problems, and then things, you know, then you can have more freedom for your time.
I like what you said about the consequences piece. Go ahead.
No. Yes, I agree with that. I was going to say the same thing. And I like that you're aware, and you're not someone, you know, in my 27-year relationship with you, you've never been someone to drive BMWs with the things going on in your life. Bitching, moaning, whining. You don't drive BMW. Mark doesn't.
That's true. You don't?
He rarely even talks about like the difficult things going on.
No.
So when he does, I know he's really feeling the stress. From the outside looking in at you, you can agree or not agree. I think you do a great job of inserting play and discretionary time into your life, definitely compared to your dad, from my view. Mm-hmm. Like you really – now, again, he had his volunteer stuff that he used to do and still does. But I view you as taking breaks away. But maybe when you're on those breaks, you're still connected via phone. You know,
that's
I don't
part
know.
Of the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So from the outside looking in, it's like, okay, yeah, Mark takes a wide variety of vacations with the family and really spends time and takes kids to school and throws the baseball and does
and
that.
And every time we see you, you're smiling.
Yeah.
You're laughing.
Yeah.
Telling good jokes, great stories. You know, having these insights, right? Like we like to pontificate. That's why we do this podcast, mm-hmm. right? And you never disappoint. Well, I'll be at a dinner, and I know that I'm going to hear something new from Mark that mm-hmm. I hadn't considered before. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't seem like you're just trapped in the weeds mm-hmm. and your mind isn't free, right?
Yeah.
And that's another thing I wanted. Okay, so 2 things. Number one, when we're talking about consequences of choices, and Zach said, I think that we are wealthy because we mm-hmm. chose to spend our time doing this, and the consequences that we're going to have to deal with are acceptable, right? And there are many people who
most of our friends could not do what we're doing,
could not choose to take this time away from work on a working day like we are doing right now without consequences that are less acceptable than the ones that we are going to have. And I think that that's something that we all need to recognize. There's one of the things that I always do, which is like I do this worst case scenario exercise, right? Like whenever I'm feeling stress or anxiety, I'm like, all right, what's the worst thing that could happen, right? Like what gets me to losing my house, moving our family into a one-bedroom apartment and having to rebuild from scratch, which honestly isn't the worst thing. I would come back from that.
Right.
It would suck big time, right? I would be ashamed. Like, I wouldn't be proud of it. It'd be hard to admit that to the family and friends. And yet I know I could handle it, right? But that, if I'm thinking, oh, that's like a worst-case scenario from a consequences of my work decisions perspective, right? So I think about that. How far am I away from that? I'm pretty far from that. Many things would have to go wrong for that to happen.
Simultaneously.
Right? And the same with you, Mark, right?
I know.
Many things would have to go wrong for that to be the case. And knowing that, I believe the three of us would come back from that. So then I think about that and you compare it and say, well, what about people who are just a few choices away from that?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of America is a few choices away from that.
Well, that's the other thing. Everything through our discussion is through the lens of America. And we can argue about politics and the fringes want to pull you out either way. But the vast majority of people are still somewhere moderate and in the center. But that doesn't get media love. But I don't think any of us really know what it's like to truly not have freedom, like in a hardcore way. I know, at least I can say I don't. Like growing up in a society where careers are chosen or truly limited based on who you are or where you're from or the sex you are or things like that.
Or you don't have the right to act or speak. Freedom of speech.
Right.
Jeez.
Right.
You know where you hear stories about that, though, is in taxi cabs.
Mm.
You meet people from all over the world in taxi cabs. Many of them come from horrible, horrible parts of the world. I mean,
and they love driving a taxi.
They do, and they love the freedom of it. And they will tell you stories about what it's like to be truly repressed. I mean, you know, we can't. There's some people that think that we're not free. Everything's
sure.
being tracked online, which it is, right? But like that doesn't take away
on the continuum of freedom. We're still quite free.
The continuum of freedom. We're still quite free because when you hear about how bad it is elsewhere, you get some perspective.
You just gave me perspective. The only thing I disagree with Mark. This is the boomer in Mark coming out. Taxi cab drivers, Uber drivers.
I'm speaking mainly to my experiences 15 years ago in Australia,
and
in the United States up until about 5 years ago.
Well, I was going to agree with you,
which is actually we're hurting because I'm not getting the same driver experience from Uber.
Well, see,
the international flavor in Uber is not what an old school taxi cab company gave you.
I got one recently literally was like this, and so I forget the country. Maybe it was Lebanon. He was a full bird colonel in the Lebanon army. And then whatever occurred in that country, they stripped him of his stuff, took him. He's like, I was making what would have been considered over six figures over there, had a very high, respectable job. And they just came in and took all of that away. And so I instantly just moved my family to the U.S. And he's like, now I drive Uber and do some manual labor stuff. He's like, but guess what? My kids got to go to schools. They grew up in the U.S. and one's a dentist and the other's doing something. And he's like, and that's what this country gives. This country gives opportunity. And this dude was only like 60 years old.
Well, and this is kind of where I wanted to take this, which was freedom, right? Freedom of action and freedom of action and property rights and all that was taken away from him, right? But so many times we are imprisoned by our own anxieties, worries.
Self-limiting beliefs.
Fears, right? And I'm sure when he was going through that, his emotions, I cannot imagine how negative my emotions would be if you were taking away my livelihood, you were taking away my title, everything that everyone knew me as, my identity, and you were taking it away from me. That would be so hard. And I was having to leave my home country, right? But then to have the ability to look back on it, months later, years later, and to say, wow, like, how bad was it? You know what I mean? Like,
he wasn't even bitter, man. Like, he didn't even throw the government under the bus. Like, he was just explaining so matter-of-factly what happened and all about, like, like as American as you could get without – I doubt he had citizenship here. But like this is a guy I'd want if I was running for politics in my commercial. Like he was just pro-America, America, America, like loved it within his blood.
Yeah.
And didn't throw the country where he came from under the bus. He's just like, yeah, this is just what happened there. It's like, wow, I would have so much – I'd have to deal with so much hate and resentment that I'd have towards my government because I'm used to that freedom.
Well, we're used to – you know – when we talk about it and you say we come at this with the lens of America, I was like, I think we would be remiss not to say these things, right? We come at it from the lens of a capitalistic democracy, right? Those two things, to us, we equate capitalism with freedom, right? Free markets, free choice. Democracy, we equate with freedom, right? The freedom to vote, to have a say in the way that you are governed. And so – whether or not those things are free or not is up for debate. But that's the lens that we come at it with. And I would say that as Americans within those systems, we equate those things as enabling some, at least some level of freedom.
What are you thinking? You wrote down something while he was talking.
Oh, I think I'm just trying to think about devil's advocate here, right? Because there are a lot of people that would disagree, you know, that they think that they don't have a choice based on how they're, what socioeconomic area they were born into, right?
Right.
And I would definitely agree that there are limited choices.
Yes.
That, you know, everyone's got options. Some people got a lot more options than others.
No doubt.
And some people started ahead of the finish or the starting line than others.
Yes, yes. Yes, but self-reliance, right? Think about you know our grandparents' generation, great grandparents' generation, and just like the values in American society that were that were valued. I guess don't be using that word, but whatever. Self-reliance was always this thing that that was Americana, right? Self-reliance. And now we're getting much more into a collectivist mentality.
Yeah,
you know, like protect. You know, like too big to fail. Mm-hmm. You know, now everybody's right. Now nobody can fail, right? Like that's part of the what you have to accept in capitalism.
Well,
that's not capitalism.
It's not. Okay.
That's not.
Yeah.
That's social. So think about this: in 2008, when the great financial crisis happened, the GFC, and those entities should have went under. And let's talk about them. General Motors should not be in existence.
AIG
should. You know. Lehman Brothers did go under. Bear Stearns did go under. They were the sacrificial lambs. But many, many large financial institutions and some of the biggest businesses that you know of in America right now should not be in existence.
They made
right
bad
now.
Managerial decisions and placed terrible bets and then allowed the taxpayer to bill them out.
And that's the key. Socialized losses. That is not capitalism.
That's not capitalism.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
So we ended up propping those up.
Yeah.
And so now I think where you end up now is you end up with the individual looking at that and saying, wait a minute. If we have to socialize losses of these massive profit-building corporations with rich C-suite executives that got out of there with golden parachutes, if we have to do that, then what are you doing for us, government? How come you aren't socializing some of my pain, right? And now I think that's where you end up today.
And with the animosity, right?
Oh, animosity.
I was writing. One thing I want to talk about was kind of the legends of freedom that we're brought up with, right?
Yeah.
George Washington and the cherry tree never told a lie, right? Like these stories that we're raised with and these phrases that are said to us. I remember in school, in grade school, you know, saying this is – the teacher's telling me this is the only free country in the world.
Yes, I remember that.
I do remember that.
Yeah, there's a lot of countries that are not – I would consider free. We kind of touched on that a little bit. But I don't know. I lived in Australia. Seems pretty free.
Yeah, I lived in Europe. Yeah.
Seems pretty free, right?
Yeah.
You know, like.
There are definitely varying levels of freedom.
Yeah.
Depending on the place
yeah.
That you live.
So these when you get these legends that as you become more educated and go into adulthood that you know to be false. That builds this animosity towards the whole system, and I think people now have the ability to gather more information easier. So the hypocrisies are exposed easier now, which then gives them this negative feeling towards the whole thing. Right?
Yeah. They want to burn the system.
I think that's the biggest difference between millennials and Gen Z is that millennials look at the system and go, oh man, this is kind of bullshit. I think if we did this, this, and this better, mm-hmm. that would really help. Okay, that, yeah. but Gen Zers are like, burn the bitch down,
right. Yep.
And we'll figure out what happens next.
Yeah. So Ray Dalio and a lot of authors, the two very famous historians that you'd like, they wrote a variety of books, one called Generation, the 13th Generation, which is about the Generation X. They wrote Generations, and then they wrote The Fourth Turning. And then you also have Ray Dalio talking about it. And what they're looking at is the current society that we're in, and you've got tons of internal strife, tons of external strife, and tons of financial strife. And when those three things counteract, new systems are built. And so what Ray Dalio is saying is
what happens before the new system is built?
Well,
the old system
is
torn down.
When enough people believe that the system isn't working, they tear the system down. Because they don't believe it's working for them. And he says, you know, we're pretty close to that in the U.S. today. And he's been measuring this for his whole career, 50 years, and it's difficult. And so what you said, what we kind of would look at our generation is more incremental change. How can we use the system to tweak the system? Mm-hmm. Radical change is how do we get rid of the system? And that's only through typical violence, right? Civil war, unrest.
And I would recommend, you know, anyone can go and search on YouTube, Ray Dalio, The Changing World Order.
Yeah, it's a great – he has a 35-minute video that summarizes it. It's
fantastic.
Summarizes
it very well. If you like that and you want more information on that topic, read The Fourth Turning, which is it just – to summarize it, this is cyclical. Mm-hmm. This isn't anything new. It's not like this hasn't happened before. Right?
It's new for everybody's lifetime.
Yes.
And so that's why it feels brand new. It is absolutely not new. It's occurred in every country over time. These cycles of growth and decay. And in the U.S., we are past the peak and we are heading down the trough.
Right.
So
anyway,
freedom.
How can we maintain this thing?
How can we kick it as keep kicking it down the road as far as possible? Like,
one, I'm good with that.
Sure.
Well, we've
as long
enjoyed
as you can.
Yeah. Ever since we've been born,
yeah.
we've been in this
in a bull market.
We've been in a bull market, this period of prosperity, of growth, expansion, peace on our home soil.
Yeah. Well, the dollar for us is a huge – that's the U.S.'s biggest strength is having the U.S. world reserve currency, the U.S. dollar. I mean, all commodities are traded in dollars. All derivatives contracts are traded in dollars. All energy must be traded in dollars. And now Russia and China, they're like – yeah, we're pretty much done with that system.
And here's where I wanted to go here with this with the freedom episode. I thought about this before, and so I'm glad that we organically got there without me having to interject it. And that is to talk about what does the dollar give us? Mm-hmm. Optionality. Mm-hmm. Just like I said, I don't want to necessarily choose. I just want to have optionality. I want to have the ability to choose. I want to have the ability to trade what it is I have for something that I want, right? And it's interesting how the system is built worldwide, right? We're talking monetary now, worldwide and within the U.S. And so that makes me think of a couple things. Number one, dollars and debt. Dollars that give you optionality and debt that take away
limit.
Optionality, right? And so when we are thinking about freedom, I have this narrative in my head. Sure, it's not true. I need to read about it. Or there's some element of truth to it. And it is this, is that whenever the slavery went away, a new system, which the system is older than slavery, but mm-hmm. the transition between a slave-based system and a debt-based system. And what is the difference between the two? And one, if you are born into being a slave, you have no freedom. You're told what to do. That's it. With debt, you choose yourself into a type of slavery in which you must pay back the decisions that you've made in the past. You borrow from your future self in order to have something today that you then takes away that choices and optionality and stuff. You become a slave to the choices you made in the past. And I just thought it's so interesting thinking about that and how it impacts your freedom.
That, I mean, I have a very – most people don't think about – they don't have a philosophy of personal finance or debt, definitely. But, you know, for me, debt, I hate it. Like, that's why I like not having debt. Okay. I can sell all my assets, have a big pool of money, and move my family to Costa Rica if I need. Like, whatever. I can do whatever I want if I don't have these debts. And I guess people can still do that when they have debts, but it just makes the rest of life much more difficult if you choose to, you know, bankruptcy and not pay back debts. Like, it continues to limit your choices. But not having debt makes me sleep well at night.
I know, but that I like is, that. That's not the – I mean, talking about what Mark's point was earlier about being born into a lower social economic status, first of all, even us being born into middle-class families, it's not like we just had the choice to sell all our assets mm-hmm. and not be in debt.
Right.
No. In order to even get going in this country, in this monetary-based system that we have, it's commonly accepted that you need a college degree.
Yeah, you take on debt.
You get a bunch of debt, and you got to have somewhere to live. A house.
And a car.
You take on 30 years of mortgage debt, right? So immediately you start off with tons of debt that you then have to work your way out of. And that's just the way our monetary system was built. And if you think about it, okay, great. That's how it's built. Who cares? Well, tying it back to freedom, you think about why is it built that way? And I believe it's built that way to influence behavior, right? So behavior is influenced by rewards, punishments, restraints, and compulsions. So obviously this monetary system that we have is built to put on certain rewards for doing certain things, certain restraints against doing other things, right? Punishing you if you don't pay. It's all built around incentive and coercion of behavior. It's brilliant. Whoever came up with it, I'll say, is brilliant because it's self-chosen. I don't want to use the word slavery, but it's a self-chosen giving away of freedom, that's for sure.
Hmm. Keeps us working.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if people don't have debt, then there's nobody to work. If everybody has money and doesn't need to work, then what do, right?
Yeah, there's a thought, right? Because in the pandemic, there was so much money that was given out with stimulus. And then there was this shortage of people in the workforce. And it kind of became this narrative, well, it's just because people are lazy and they have these stimulus checks and they don't want to work. I think that there's definitely some part of it in that. I wonder also, though, about demographics and baby boomers retiring and things like that that don't get counted into the equation. But one of the things that always sticks with me, as we've done episodes on happiness, and I've done a lot of reading about happiness and a bunch of research that goes into happiness, and there is a component of it that is part of human nature, and that is productivity. Mm-hmm. Productivity makes people, like they say it, and it's part of me, it's part of everyone that I've ever talked to, which is if I'm building a fence and I go to bed and that fence is 12 feet long, and when I woke up, it was 5 feet long. I feel good. I made progress that day, right?
If you feel like 7 feet of progress was a good day's work.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Whatever,
yeah, if you're
whatever
capable
your standard
of 100 does, feet, then yeah. you don't feel good.
Yeah. Whatever your standard is, right? Uh-huh. And so I suspect that, what's his name? Custom Joe. I suspect that if Custom Joe were in a different monetary system, he wasn't in debt. I don't know if he is in debt. I don't know what his motivation is. But it being so good at something and finding your life's calling, that's natural motivation. That's that productivity that's built within us. And I suspect with freedom, Custom Joe might still choose to do what he's doing.
How many quote-unquote rich people that are really, really good at what they do, how many of them say, it's not about the money? You know what I mean? They just love being the best at that thing that they do.
Well, at some point it clearly isn't because they're not spending it.
No.
Yeah. You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. At some point,
to me, it goes back to, we can call it a million things, your personal legacy, your life's task, your core purpose. Like when Mark said earlier, you know, well, it, people are working, you know, it keeps them working. And then you can take that to a high level for what? Like, what are we all doing here? Like, what's the beehive? Why? Okay, he's selling more furniture. I'm coaching people behavior. Like, why? What's the point? Well, it's like, well, that's a big level picture. But at least at the smaller level, if you're achieving what you believe to be your personal legacy, your life's task, that's very fulfilling. And you can't judge it somebody else for that, right? Outside of like, oh, I want to be the best murderer ever, right? I'm not talking about that. Okay. But
so if a centrally planned state is tells you what your life's mission is, what are the chances that they get it right versus the chances
exactly.
of you figuring it
centrally
out?
Centrally planned. That's so good. It makes me think of the movie Inception.
You have less freedom, right?
But if you embrace the propaganda from the government of the collective good, right? It's just individualism versus collectivism. It's simple, right? China has different values than we do. in terms of the political structure. So if it's like I believe in the state, in the collective, the overall group, so when I'm assigned my job or my task and I do it to my upper limits, well, who's to say that that person can't feel amazing doing that? Just as many others probably are like, this is bullshit. I don't want to be a farmer. I want to be an engineer, like in the movie Inception. When Matthew McConaughey, they tell him, sorry, man, your son's going to be a farmer, not an engineer. He's like, that's bullshit. He's like, we don't need engineers. We need farmers.
Yeah. I want to be a fighter pilot. Damn it. Mm-hmm. What am I doing sitting here? Right? Mm-hmm. No, that is so.
But the propaganda piece, which is just a negatively sounding word for persuasion, for media, it could all be called propaganda because sure. It is. But that's important because propaganda, ideas change the world. Ideas embed and they infect and they become stories, which become myths, which become legends that Mark was talking about. And those are the things we pass down and that shape our overall realities. So it takes a couple generations, but we can program people, and they all try to do it through the media, of what to think before you talk, how to talk, what to act, how we value.
I'm an influencer. Mm-hmm. I want to become an influencer.
Right, and you might as well, we could call them propagandists.
Yeah.
I get why they want to do that. That's a loud microphone. The social media is a very loud bullhorn. But it needs to be guarded. Like when the government is – to me, it's one thing for a person with – individual freedom or sovereignty to try to convince me to do something, and it's very different for a centralized government to try to convince or to tell me I must do something. I just don't like the latter.
Oh, that's totally different. I don't like the latter. In one you have choice, and in the other you don't. It's clearly quite different.
I want to highlight four things about freedom that I think are interesting to me, and you guys can tell me if you agree or you think it's stupid. So there's freedom to, okay? That's personal freedom. Freedom to golf, freedom to do this podcast, freedom to speak out about my government and tell them I don't like what they're doing. There's freedom over. That's freedom over others, freedom to take. That's called sovereign freedom. That's what governments have. Eminent domain, how people can parent their children, freedom over. Then there's freedom from constraints and obstacles. If you have enough power, you can remove those things or create a path so that they're not there. But this is one thing we haven't talked about. And this is where I'm at in my life. This is what I'm trying to do. This is my goal. Freedom for. I'm trying to create freedom for my children in how I view freedom. And to me, that can come from assets, but more importantly, it comes from the values and principles that I think are important and the lessons and the ability to continue to learn and strive and self-reliance that Mark mentioned. And if they get those things right, aside from the asset piece they might get from me, they will have freedom, I believe. And to me, I think all three of us are trying to do the same types of things for our kids. But I don't think all people think like that about trying to give their kids freedom, opportunities.
I think a lot of people think about it just from an asset standpoint. You know, like I want to be able to leave some money for my kids,
sure,
or leave a business or like – but I don't think they –
that connection.
Yeah, the connection to all of those things.
I think a lot of people want to help their kids so much that they make them helpless.
You're right.
Yeah, helicopter parents. And as a parent, that's a hard thing to do, you know. Like when do you let them kind of fail on their own?
And each has their own line. Which, you know, yeah. I'm not trying to tell people their lines.
Sure.
Maybe the way that I would describe it is people want to give their children freedom from being a debt slave, right?
Yeah.
But they don't teach them then how to find –
financial literacy.
Not just financial literacy. Sure, that's part of it. But how to find what you talked about, their life's purpose, their life's mission, whatever it is that makes them feel good when they went to bed because they were productive, right?
Yeah.
I think that part of our life mission, when we talk about our kids, that goes into it, right? I talked about a fence being longer, but realistically, what makes me feel better at the end of the day? If I feel like I contributed to society and particularly into my children, then that makes me feel better at the end of the day. It's not my life's mission at this point in time, but it's definitely become more and more so.
But that's the thing with all these big topics and principles that we talk about on Life Lab. They're fun because they're gray. You know, like we can define freedom, but think about just parenting role. We all know people who are caregivers, but are they fathers? you know, like, or mothers, like, there's a big difference between, oh, I got my kid, they're secure, they eat every day. Okay. Do you have an emotional connection with them? Do you have intimacy with them? Do you know everything they like? Do you make their interests your interests? I mean, there's different levels with all of these things. And there's no, I'm not saying my way is the right way by any means. It's right, I think, for me and my family. But I want to change course and I want to ask Mark a direct question. Can I do that? Or do you have a ping?
No, go.
Can you have too much of a good thing? Can you have too much freedom?
Yes. I think in general, I would be of the opinion that you can have too much of anything is probably not too much power, corrupts, too mm-hmm. much money, wastes,
ooh,
too much,
I like that one.
Too much of just about anything. Never is a good thing. So like, I mean, freedom to think about Emperor Tiberius, right? You know, I mean, the freedom that he had to do whatever he had in his lair, you know, what I'm talking about.
No,
right?
Give us some more context. Oh, okay. You know the history way
better. Yeah, so it's like after Augustus, there was, you know, in the height of the Roman Empire, Tiberius had this place away from Rome and debauchery to levels that you could only imagine, you know, sacrifices, orgies, whatever, the whole nine yards. He had all the freedom in the world. That's too damn much,
that's too
right?
Much, right?
Yeah, too much money, too much power, too much freedom to do anything he wanted to without any like physical consequences to, you know, to him. Yeah, so you can definitely have too much freedom.
Because it's not fulfilling, right? Things go awry.
What's
right?
he made of?
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Right.
Think of the stories that he just told. The stories of this guy who had everything in the world where he had a lair and he had banged chicks and had orgies and sacrificed people. It wasn't. He brought engineering to his people and created water irrigation.
I might have done a little bit of that too. I'd have to check. You know what I mean?
But still.
Like, that's not what he was doing
for.
Some horrible stuff,
right,
man.
Yeah. Right.
Ultimately, it's like, why does something like that end up so negatively, right? Yeah. Even on the person who did it. Like Tiberius, I'm sure at the end of his life, you were like, how fulfilled are you? Because you had your place with orgies and sacrifices.
Well, I think his son was
the
real psycho too. Either Caligula.
Caligula.
I think, was his son.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Right. There's this. So Kendrick Lamar has this thing. He said in this album, Damn, he said, what happens on Earth stays on Earth. Like, so all the negative things that you do on Earth, they don't just like stop with you dying, right? Like that negative energy aura is stuck here, mm-hmm. right? You do positive things, that stays here too. Mm-hmm. So what happens on Earth stays on Earth. Like that.
I like that. Know your echo.
That's powerful.
When you leave a room or the earth, there's still going to be an echo. What do you want your echo to be?
Mm-hmm. I come to think, too, that you reap what you sow is such a true thing, right? So at the end of his life, where I was going with that is I'm sure Tiberius, when he thought about all of the things that happened at that place, felt worse for it, not better for it, right? And he did that to himself. You reap what you sow. Just think about it that way, right? I really think there's some truth to that. Sometimes I believe we are our own judge and jury, you know what I mean? Especially at the end of life.
I agree with what Mark said in terms of too much of anything, any good thing, it spoils it. Do you agree to?
No, yeah. I mean, it's excess, right? It's Aristotle, the happy medium.
I always like to think of just simple examples. I can think back to, you know, my drinking days or just younger days when you had a lot of autonomy and you could really do whatever you want without having parents or authority figures watching. And you make a series of choices and they're not all good, but I did learn from them. Luckily, I didn't die, but that was just luck. But even more recent, like taking my family on this vacation last summer, it was amazing. Again, I had the opportunity to do so. It was 3 weeks. That's really fucking long. Like we learned, it's just too long. Like the last few days, Kizzy and I are just like, yeah, we could be back to work already because it was just too much.
Well, so now that we're talking about this and I'm thinking about it, you can have too much of just about anything. Freedom, however, I don't know if you have too much freedom. If you use it correctly, why would you have too much of it?
How you use the freedom.
Yes.
Okay,
the
good differentiation. Yes. I agree with the differentiation.
Yes. If you choose well.
Don't take my freedom away, but make a better choice with it.
No,
I like
no
that.
Doubt. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think about is that we were talking about behavior being influenced, right? And that being a way that takes away your freedom. And how I think about it like why would my behavior be influenced by these things? And it's because it would influence the way that I feel. Typically, like, I still end up making a choice. I still end up making the decision. However, I might be driven to do so by my anxiety, worry, fear that the news is throwing something at me, that social media is throwing something at me. And so if I think about it from that perspective, I think about how, wow, you can be not free as a free person. You can have the freedom to choose, the freedom to act, whatever, and yet be imprisoned by your own thoughts, feelings, emotions.
Creed, 1998, my own prison.
Yes, yes. We create our own prison. Well played, Mark.
Well, I know we've kind of touched on this already, but what I wanted to do is take it to the next step and see what you guys think. So then I think about it in your circle of control and your circle of influence, right? So, like, a lot of people might think that they are more free if they can control others, right?
So, well, they do think that.
Yeah, yeah. And so then I'll say, okay, so if that's like the most free, you get to choose your own choices and you can control externalities and what other people do. That's the most free, right? And then you suck that in and say, okay, now you can't control what other people do. But if you're able to accept it and not let it bother you and control what you do, then you are still free. And then let's even suck that in and say, okay, now put yourself into a place where you are imprisoned, right? But if you're a Gandhi or a Mandela or one of these people, you might be freer than your jailers because you can be free within yourself, right? And so I think of, like, freedom in relation to these circles of control and how we would be like, well, no, if I can't do X, Y, and Z, then I'm not free. And it's not really true.
Well, it is if you're building that reality and accepting that reality. But that's more of a Buddhist approach to, you know, life is pain. Life is suffering. I choose to participate in that. I can end the suffering by making different choices. But that's really hard for Western people to grasp, I think.
Very hard. It's definitely divorced from our concept of freedom in America.
What about if you asked Custom Joe, what is freedom? So, like, what would he – again, I know it's your perspective of what he might say, but just the Amish in general, you interact with these folks, and they're very different than the average working class American. How would you describe how they might think about freedom?
I think they are about as they're pretty autonomous, you know what I mean? Like, they have their own, like, cultural group constraints, right?
Sure.
They're supposed to kind of behave a certain way and take one of a few different trades. So, I mean, they are some – if they want to be a part of that, you know, Amish community, they are limited in the kinds of things that they can do. But, you know, they're free from a lot of the elements of modern life that are quite negative.
Right.
And I would think that especially the men would be pretty stress-free. They seem quite stress-free.
They seem stress-free.
They seem quite stress-free. I think a lot of them have very strong spiritual backgrounds, which help, you know, whether you have a strong, like, Eastern perspective, or if you're a firm believer in Christ, you know, that kind of spiritual baseline, strong spiritual, you know, baseline can help you deal with anything that's thrown at you. And I think most of them have that.
The very few Amish people I've dealt with, they're very in the moment. They're present in what I'm doing with them. They're not thinking about what they did before. They're not worrying about being dinged. They're not worrying about what's coming up. They're in that moment. And think about our day. How much of our day, when we're really, truly in the moment, whether it's with our kids or even right now, like, I think all of us have probably been in the moment now. And then at other times, it's like maybe something pops in.
Even us.
It took me turning my phone off.
Exactly.
Yeah. You got to turn your phone.
100%.
If that phone is on, you are
being sucked away from the moment.
Completely.
So, and for me, though, I don't believe someone can have full freedom, full spectrum freedom, or be enlightened, as the Eastern folks might say, without being present in the moment. And, like, when I feel really good anytime I'm feeling good, it's not because I'm planning out for 52-year-old Zach to be ex. It's like I'm in the moment, man, doing whatever it is, whether it's working with a furniture customer or doing some great code or leading my team or playing with my son. I don't know. Being present is very important to freedom, I think.
Deepak Chopra met with the Dalai Lama, and the Dalai Lama told him, you know, the most important person in your life is the person you're with right now.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing you're doing, you've ever done in your life, is what you're doing right now. You know, and yes, he kept repeating that now. And I think about that a lot. And that is when you're quite, you know, you are, I'm happiest. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Well, it's almost uncomfortable, I think, for a lot of Western people. When you bump into somebody, especially if you don't know them that well, and they're an extremely good listener, and they stop everything, and it's eye contact, and they're asking, you're almost like, what's wrong with this
right
person? They're giving you their full self in the whole universe. It's on you, buddy. And we're like, oh my God, I like have to perform now. We're so uncomfortable with being in the moment, or I'd call that situational freedom. But we don't know where this conversation's going to go. Like, I don't have a plan. I haven't talked through what questions I want to ask.
It's not transactional,
mm-hmm,
right? There isn't a desire
quid pro quo
placed on me, and I'm giving something back in exchange for it. It's now. It's in the now.
Mm-hmm.
It's free.
Can I throw out one other thing? Because I know we're going to wrap up soon. We Americans, we love freedom. Freedom, right?
America.
We celebrate. We wear flags. I'm one of them. I think it's great. And yet, this is so interesting. I've always found this so paradoxical, but just part of life. All the businesses we create that helped craft the structure of freedom of America are not about freedom. They're about the exact opposite. The person at the top makes all the rules, centrally planned, do as I say, not as I do. I limit all of your freedom. Like,
yeah,
and if you don't – now, the choice is you don't have to work with me. I get that. You can choose to work elsewhere. But yeah, all of our system, all of our businesses are run completely opposite of democracy. I always just found that interesting.
I think it's interesting too, and I think it goes back to what I was talking about as far as influences and our monetary system and capitalism and all that stuff, and how it's really interesting how Mark was just talking about Custom Joe and how he seems so stress-free, and how while you were describing it, I was like, oh, I wish I was Custom Joe.
Yeah, me too.
You know what I mean? And yet we've made choices to end up where we are as business owners, titans of industry, whatever, you know, and we are sitting there in envy of someone who is not that, is an artisan, is a craftsman.
But they've found their, or at least our perspective, he's found his personal legacy, his life's task.
Now we're romanticizing.
We are.
Who knows what his
maybe
problems are.
Maybe he hates his life. We don't know.
So you mentioned something about our big companies are run completely opposite of like a elected republic, right? I was always said that the most effective form of government is a benevolent
dictatorship,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look at Singapore,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
Singapore is a
yeah
classic case. That guy, I mean, he was a dictator, but look what he did with the place, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did wonders with that. And I think our companies are, you know, benevolent dictatorships.
I'm not saying it's bad. Yeah, I just think it's interesting.
And so yes, right.
Not
exactly.
All.
Yeah, there's the – well, and I think, once again, too much.
Right.
Too much is a bad thing.
When people have choice to leave, that's what
yeah
I don't – it's like if you don't like it, just go work elsewhere. Like
yeah
if you think it's a bad fit.
The whole Uber, I can't get paid enough to make a living doing Uber. Uber wasn't designed for people to make a living doing it. It was
right
designed to supplement your
just
your
go
income,
do something
right
else.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I just
yeah
I
anyway
on that same topic, it's like that's why dictatorships always go awry in the long run,
mm-hmm,
right? You can have a benevolent dictator and things are good for a period of time. But someone having that much power and control inevitably goes awry sometime down the road. You know what I mean? And anyone who has had a bad boss, right? And a bad boss at least is restricted to the sphere of your workplace. But anyone who's had a truly bad boss knows how miserable they can make life. And so, a benevolent dictator is a great thing, but any other kind of dictator,
there's a lot that can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wasn't that Plato, philosopher kings, right?
Yeah,
like that's what
absolutely.
He
didn't think people should be able to vote unless they earned that vote through some sort of intelligence test. which is an interesting idea, but again, it would prohibit the vast majority of our country, in my opinion, from voting. I still do think, though, that I would like to see, but it would limit freedom, so I really wouldn't. But an experiment could be, if you can't even take the top three major policies of either of the presidents running and simply just, you know, move them over on the little digital booth to the proper side, should you vote? You
know, yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I don't know. But again, I really wouldn't want to enact that. I think for me, democracy is about voice and choice, even when your voice and choice are dumb.
I'm just glad we're not a true democracy.
Yeah,
you know, we're a republic.
A republic and we're really an oligocracy. I mean, if we want to get to it, but on paper, we're a republic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Well, wrap it up. We've talked about a lot. We've went from the individual level to the family level to the organizational level to the political level. We've brought in history. We've deciphered and defined freedom in a variety of ways. We've looked at the lens of freedom through different cultures and through different subgroups. And I think what we've come to understand is that it's a complex term and means different things to others. But, boy, it's better to have it than not have it. And I really like what Dave said. You don't ever want it taken away, but the choices you make with it, that's really the important piece of freedom. Change challenges. Do we have any change challenges? Had you thought of anything for the audience that they could potentially do?
I liked the idea of the constricting circles of control and the fact that you can be free in your mind even if you are not free in other ways. You know, it kind of goes back to the same thing I talk about just about every episode, which is you can't control the things that happen to you, but you can control your response to those things. As a change challenge, one of the things that I'm going to do is I'm going to think through ways that my freedom is bound naturally. I just thought about the fact that we are wrapping this episode up because we are restrained by time. Mm-hmm. And that is nothing that anyone will ever be able to remove. That is a bound to our freedom and our time here in this life that no one can ever
No one currently. Longevity field right. Specialists disagree. Right. That's right. What they're striving for.
But that lack of control, right? It hits you somewhere. Doesn't matter how rich mm-hmm. and powerful you are. You're the richest person on the planet. You're still bound
by that
time. You
can't buy a second.
So I'm really going to think about those things and reflect on them and how that impacts me and my life and what my response is going to be to all of those things that are inevitable.
Nice. I love it. Yeah. Mine, I'm rereading a really great book by Marshall Goldsmith, who is the number one executive coach in the world, works with top business leaders and politicians to change behaviors for long periods of time. And his book is Triggers. And it's all about how we overlook the environments that we're in and how our environments trigger us and trigger certain behaviors. And then we just, oh, man, he's always this way. Okay, well, let's talk about the environment and the setting. So my challenge is think about where you feel in your life you have the most freedom. It doesn't matter. And then think about where in your life you have the least freedom. You feel, as Mark said earlier, trapped. Then think about the settings that's occurring in. What's the environment like? Like, what's going on with that? And see if you can come up with any ahas or insights.
Almost like root cause analysis.
Yeah, a bit. But focusing specifically on the environment and how that triggers freedom for you or constraint. Any thoughts?
Yeah. You know, some challenges for me would be just really looking deeply at taking moments of freedom from my various responsibilities and analyzing the consequences. And I know that I am choosing to, you know, for my work duties, right? I'm choosing them more often than I should be right now because I you know, want to secure a lot of different things mm-hmm. going on at once. And if I can secure all of these things, then man, look at the light at the end of the tunnel, right? But there's still now. There's still the now that I have to be thinking about. And so just really taking a better, a closer look at what are the true consequences if I go home at 4 o'clock today, you know, and see my daughter and play with her for 2 more hours. like, what would I really lose by doing that?
Yeah,
I think every now and then, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, more often than I'm currently doing.
Yes. I love it.
Yes, that's great.
I love it. Excellent.
Plan to minimize those consequences, though. Because if you use your time to plan to minimize those consequences, then you can do it with less consequence, and you feel a little bit better about that. So that whole that's where I'm at.
To me, this whole episode has been about overcoming the great Western disease. And I think you can do that if you think more about freedom and how you do have that and how where you have that and be grateful for it. And that great Western disease is, I'll just be happy when ... So with that, as we like to say in Life Lab, experiment with life.